the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. It's amazing, and yet we have to admit it. Iranian President Mohammad Ahmadinejad is right. He's at least on to something. You will recall that Iran horribly, criminally, and sensationalistically captured 15 British sailors and Royal Marines, held them in order to play out their little publicity stunt, and then released them. Of course, that's not new for Iran. Just remember the American hostages held there during the revolutionary furor of the 1970s. But let's go back and remember here that one of the big issues of the news coverage with the release of the Marines and the Navy personnel there in Iran was the fact that one of the 15 captives was a woman. She was not only a woman, she was a mother. She's not only a mother, but the mother of a three-year-old girl. The Iranian president, again, playing this for all it was worth in terms of publicity, personally met with the captives before they left. But he also made this statement. His observation is reverberating throughout the Muslim world. He said this: "You will know that among the detainees, there is one lady who is the mother of a child. Why is it that the most difficult work, like patrolling at sea, should be given to a woman? Why is there no respect for motherhood? Why does the West not value its women?" End quote. Now, Ahmadinejad's questions are reverberating throughout the Muslim world. Nothing could more effectively demonstrate the immorality of Western values before Muslim eyes than this: the mother of a little girl sent as a warrior. We're going to be talking about this today. You see, I believe that most people around the world, and I honestly believe that most Americans, think that it is just morally wrong to send the mother of a three-year-old into a combat zone. But we're living in an age of such political correctness that it's almost impossible to say this without risking moral outrage from someone who says that we have no right to say that it would be wrong for a woman, mother or otherwise, to be doing anything, anywhere, anytime. The West has bought into a radicalized ideology of feminism and radical personal autonomy that says, look, if she wants to be there, she has a right to be there, and no one has any right to say that she shouldn't be there. But that's not the way the world is going to look at this. It was a huge publicity score for Iran, a huge publicity blow for the West. When this woman was understood to be a warrior, her title is leading seaman Faye Turney, and then to understand she was the mother of a three-year-old who had willingly gone and willingly been sent by her nation on a patrol boat in the Persian Gulf. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We're going to be talking about this. What does this say about the West? What does this say about the ultimate end of the ideology of feminism? And what does this say about what it takes or might take or will take to recover any kind of moral sense about motherhood in this culture? We're the strangest, hypocritical, schizophrenic society. We make Mother's Day a major celebration and then willingly send mothers into combat. Something very strange about that. Meanwhile, a review of some other issues in the news. Something very strange going on in California. The San Francisco Chronicle tells the story of a piece of legislation being debated in the Golden State. It's a piece of legislation that would grant birth certificates to unborn, that is, stillborn children. Sherry Gallant, according to the news article, has three photos of her daughter Julie at birth. She has a lock of Julia's newborn hair, thick and dark. She has Julia's handprints, footprints, and hospital wristbands. She also has 30 hours memories worth of grueling labor, but she has no official record of Julia's birth. Julia was stillborn with her umbilical cord around her neck. The state issued only a death certificate. See, the reality is that in all 50 states, stillborn babies are granted death certificates. Not only that, but in all 50 states, parents of stillborn babies are required to treat them as fully human beings and to arrange for their burial or cremation. Meanwhile, right down the hall, a baby at almost precisely the same gestational stage and age can be aborted with no consequence whatsoever. This push for birth certificates for stillborn babies has run into a huge obstacle, and that obstacle is the abortion rights movement. because the abortion rights movement, groups such as Planned Parenthood, say, you know, there could be unintended consequences to a piece of legislation like this. Let's just again rehearse the reality. The reality right now is that the parents are given a death certificate, but they're never given a birth certificate. So a death certificate is issued for a person who presumably never lived, even though the baby was at some point clearly alive in the womb, stillborn being defined by medical authorities as the natural death of a baby in the uterus, in the mother's womb, after 20 weeks of gestation or beyond. This is fascinating. In California, it's Senate Bill 350. There are about 3,000 families that cope with stillbirth each year just in the state of California. But the national discussion of birth certificates for stillborns is mingled, as the paper says, with the abortion debate. Listen to this. Pro-choice advocates have opposed the laws on the grounds, listen carefully, that they could fuel the anti-abortion cause by acknowledging that an unborn fetus is a person. Those words are so fascinating. And these are coming from a report in the San Francisco Chronicle. Again, I'm going to repeat that sentence. Pro-choice advocates have opposed the laws on the grounds that they could fuel the anti-abortion cause by acknowledging that an unborn fetus is a person. Very, very interesting about what's going on here. You have, obviously, a clash of worldviews going on over the issue of death certificates for stillborn babies, far more so for birth certificates for stillborn babies. This is very, very interesting, because what we have here is a situation in which opposition to this kind of bill takes an incredible amount of motivation. I mean, after all, you're facing parents who are demanding this because they suffer the grief of unborn children, of their stillborn children. These are parents who desperately wanted children, who are bearing the grief of the fact that these children were not born alive. They do not have these children to raise. They've named these children. They have buried these children. They have grieved these children. And now they are being told that they can't have birth certificates because, well, you heard it. The newspaper said this might mean an acknowledgement that the unborn fetus is a person. What we do here is deny the obvious. And Planned Parenthood has incredible, let's just say, motivation here. Planned Parenthood Vice President Yali Blair said, anytime you deal with legislation, we have to think big and think about unintended consequences. Well, she's absolutely right about that. The unintended consequences just might be that people would have to understand that what is being aborted in the womb is a human being, the very human being that is stillborn in one room and aborted in the next, the very same human being that in one room, once dead, requires a burial or cremation and gets a death certificate, while in the room, presumably even right down the hall, is simply discarded as unwanted biological matter. The incongruity of this points to the immorality that we now face. It is expected that this piece of legislation, this is Senate Bill 850 in the California Senate, is going to face stiff opposition, and yet, once again, it is important for us to observe that this is a major fault line in the culture, and it tells us a great deal about ourselves. So does what we read. USA Today, a fascinating full-page article. The 25 books that leave a legacy. According to USA Today, they asked their editors and book critics to choose 25 titles that made an impact on readers over the past 25 years and to rank them. Now, if this is true, I mean, all I can say is, if these really are the 25 most influential books in this culture for the last 25 years, we're in worse shape than we thought. Number one, according to this list, is Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, published in 1998, of course, by J.K. Rowling. Midnight book parties, all-night readathons, overnight deliveries, a boy wizard named Harry got kids and adults thinking that reading was cool, and mega sales of the magical series redefined what it meant to be a bestseller. Well, if you're just looking at raw numbers and at, you know, a movement, an entire industry created by a book unexpectedly, it's hard to argue with Harry Potter being listed number one. But after that, it gets really weird. The number two book is by Jacqueline Mitchard, entitled The Deep End of the Ocean. It was made a publishing sensation because of Oprah Winfrey, when on September 17, 1996, she made Mitchard's novel her first book club pick. I don't hear many people talking about that. It's hard for me to believe that book number two of the last 25 years would be a book very few people seem to be talking about. Number three, The Da Vinci Code. Well, again, a publishing sensation, but only from 2003. It's hard to believe that over a 25-year span, that one is going to have much impact. The rest of it is pretty much, not exclusively, but pretty much self-help stuff and diet books. There are some incredible exceptions in the list, such as Alan Bloom's The Closing of the American Mind. And you also have books such as The Greatest Generation by Tom Brokaw. But also on the list is Fast Food Nation, Waiting to Exhale, Derek Humphrey's book on euthanasia, Final Exit, and Chicken Soup for the Soul. Well, if we are what we read, we're a pretty confused people. We'll be back to talk about whether we're confused enough to continue sending mothers into combat. This is the Albert Miller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. It is not pleasant to acknowledge that every once in a while someone as absolutely out of line and frankly as frightening as Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad can be right. But President Ahmadinejad made a statement, and it was timed during the release of the British Navy and Marine captives, the 15 personnel that Iran captured. And, of course, this is a nation quite accustomed now to taking hostages and playing it out for maximum media impact. But in this case, the media impact was particularly damaging to the West, and it was particularly damaging in this case because of the issue of motherhood. Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad did score a big hit worldwide. It's reverberating throughout the Muslim world and beyond when he criticized Western nations for sending women into combat. In this case, Faye Turney, leading seaman Faye Turney, is a mother of a three-year-old daughter. And this is a big story. It's a big story that I think is going to get bigger because it raises all kinds of issues about not only Western civilization, but just how far the ideology of feminism has gone and will go in terms of what we are and are not willing to admit, what we are and are not willing to acknowledge, and what we are and are not willing to allow when it comes to differences between men and women. The bottom line is that we have become, as a society, not all individuals, but as a society, so absolutely committed to absolute lack of distinction, denial of all distinction between the genders, that right now we have an American uniform serving in Iraq women who are in the combat zones. Now, the armed services will tell you that they're not allowed or permitted into certain jobs and certain sectors, but in reality, they're there. And, of course, this came to light with the British Navy, with leading seaman Faye Turney, when President Ahmadinejad made quite a media issue of the fact she was a mother. His statement was this: "You will know that among the detainees, there is one lady who is a mother of a child. Why is it that the most difficult work, like patrolling at sea, should be given to a woman? Why is there no respect for motherhood? Why does the West not value its women?" Kathleen Parker, writing in the Washington Post, said this: "On any given day, one isn't likely to find common cause with Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. He's a dangerous, lying, Holocaust-denying, Jew-hating, cutthroat thug, not to put too fine a point on it. But he was dead on when he wondered why a once great power such as Britain sends mothers of toddlers to fight its battles." And here's my argument. Driven by a fanatical ideology of feminism, the West has turned its back on reality, a reality as basic as motherhood. We've adopted a new morality that insists, nature's obstinacy notwithstanding, that there's no difference between men and women. And that produces mothers of babies and toddlers in uniform and in the killing zones. Kathleen Parker went on to say, "Just because we may not feel humiliated doesn't mean that we're not. In the eyes of Iran and other Muslim nations, we're wimps. While the West puts its mothers in boats with rough men, Muslim men rescue," she put that in quotation marks, "women, and drape them in floral hijabs. We can debate whether they're right until all our boys wear aprons, but it won't change the way we're perceived. The propaganda value Iran gained from its lone female hostage, the mother of a three-year-old, was incalculable." Ms. Parker goes on to say, "It's not fashionable these days to suggest that women don't belong in or near combat, or that children need their mothers. Yes, they need their fathers too, but children in their tender years are dependent on their mothers in unique ways." Now, interestingly, just hours before she was captured, leading seaman Turney commented about her daughter in an interview conducted with the Shropshire Star in Britain. She said this. She said, "Speaking of her daughter, this is a three-year-old little girl. She's getting more of a character every day. It's a shame that I'm missing that, but she's a top girl and will grow up to be a very reliable, independent, strong young woman," which is exactly what I want for her. That's absolutely fascinating. It is a shame that she's missing her daughter. And so is the presence of mothers in combat zones, whether in British or American uniforms. What Iran did in capturing these hostages and playing them as media pawns was evil and reprehensible and very effective. The moral weakness of the West was made all the more clear to the watching world, and our ideological fanaticism was open for all to see. Well, I want to know what you think about it. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. President Ahmadinejad scored big in the Muslim world. But I think the damage to the West goes far beyond that. I think there are people beyond the Muslim world who, observing the same reality, would simply say it makes no sense. It is indeed immoral. Immoral for a nation to send mothers into a combat zone. And remember that this is a non-conscription army. This is a volunteer armed services. And remember that the nation voluntarily sent them. And not only that, the nation is bought into an equal opportunity, equal employment kind of worldview that says you can't say that women shouldn't be there. But I do think most of us believe that. The phone number, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I'd love for you to join the discussion. I'd love to know what you think. My guess is there are a lot of people out there who saw this, both the drama of the hostages, their capture and release, and heard the Iranian president's comments and thought, you know, he just might have nailed us there. I can guarantee you that around the Muslim world, they're absolutely convinced that that is one more sign of Western decadence. They're absolutely convinced that a nation that would send mothers into combat has already crossed some very significant moral thresholds that may be very difficult to cross again the other way. Now, of course, when it comes to the treatment of women, the Muslim world has an awful lot to answer for. But how do we have any credibility to address our concerns about the way they treat women? Remember, they won't even allow a lot of women or girls to be educated and all the rest. How do we complain about that when they look at us and say, well, at least we don't send our moms, the mothers of toddlers, into combat? The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We have calls coming in from around the country. We'd love to have you join the conversation as well. There may be someone out there who says, look, the Iranian president is absolutely wrong. It's right for women to be placed into combat. It's their choice. It's about whatever they want to do. It's simply a matter of equal opportunity and equal employment. There are others, I think, who may have a very contrary position, but in order to make sense in this argument, we're going to have to make some declarations about basic values and basic convictions. Number one, is there any difference between men and women? Number two, should this make any difference when it comes to public policy? That line may be difficult for some people to draw, but I think it's going to lead to a fascinating conversation. To join, call 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Coast to coast and with listeners around the world, this is the Albert Mueller Program.
Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmueller.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mueller.
Welcome back, folks. My thesis, I think, is very simple to understand, and that is that civilization requires certain distinctions to be recognized between men and women, and in particular, even between fathers and mothers. And to deny that distinction is uncivilized. I think it's uncivilized. It is a threat to civilization to send mothers into combat. I want to know what you think. This whole situation with Faye Turney in Great Britain has raised the issue. And President Ahmadinejad's comments have spread them worldwide. I think we need to talk about it. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Danny calling from Huntsville, Alabama, listening on XM170. Go ahead, Danny.
Yes, sir. I just want to tell you how much I appreciate your show and listen to you every day going home.
Well, thank you. What do you think about this?
Well, I don't think that Ahmadinejad got the upper hand on us or can hold the moral ground, in that they teach their women, as they do their young men, to become martyrs in the war against us. Just as yesterday, the young lady blew herself up in a police line and took out 16 or so soldiers.
Yeah, Danny, I think your call, you know, affords us the opportunity to focus the argument a little bit here. I really appreciate your point, because we're not saying, I'm certainly not saying, that Iran's treatment of women is superior to ours. As a matter of fact, you have radical extremist groups that are indeed securing and soliciting, recruiting not only women but girls and even grandmothers, as we talked about on this program a few weeks ago, to be suicide bombers. They would argue that that's because these women are dying for God. They say, you know, what in the world are your women dying for? I'm not going to argue for the superiority of the Muslim world's treatment of women. Not at all. The point is, however, that I do think we have been humiliated before the watching world because of the way we treat women by sending them into combat. So on that issue alone, Danny, do you think that we really violate something important to our own values when we send mothers into combat?
I have to agree with you that in some ways we do, but in others we don't. I believe as long as we hold our women in respect and that they're in a support role, that we're doing just fine.
All right. Very interesting comment. And, of course, one of the complicating factors right now is what you mean by support role. And, for instance, some people do not know that there are women pilots that are actually flying combat missions that are being defined as support missions. So it's very interesting how those roles are used, too. Let's go to Roy calling from Gagetown, Michigan. Go ahead, Roy.
Hey, how you doing, Albert?
I'm doing great. Glad to hear from you. What do you think about this whole issue?
Well, it's not a matter of the West not valuing their women. Women have fought to put themselves in this situation, and they have fought very hard for this. It is the men who have fought against this, knowing after they've been to battle how bad it is, and what they had to put up with out there. This woman, she had the option, as far as the United States is concerned. I'm not sure about the United Kingdom, but if she, you know, women in America, who are undoubtedly they're in the same situation as that woman there is, they have the option to opt out and get discharged once they become pregnant, or once they have a child, or once we're ending up going to battle. And she's at home with, you know, she's got kids at home. She's like, she can say, hey, look, I got kids at home. I'd like my discharge now, please. And they give it to her. But this woman here was so self-absorbed with herself and not even thinking about her daughter at home that she put herself into this situation.
Yeah, but Roy, you're being very judgmental.
Being judgmental at all. This is what they fought for. And I am so sick and tired of these people saying, hey, you know what, it's the West that doesn't value the women. It's the women who don't value themselves.
Okay, and you know that I was just trying to elicit your further comment by saying you're being judgmental. And I would simply say that there are appropriate times we have to make moral judgments. And I think the moral judgment you have made in this case is one that makes a great deal of sense. I appreciate your call. Let's go to Doug calling from Tampa, Florida. Go ahead, Doug.
Hi, Dr. Mueller. I love it. Love your show. I listen to it every day. My comment is that I don't think the issue has always gone back to, as far as women being in the military, I don't think we ever thought as men that a woman could not do it. I think it's the issue was that women should not do it, as far as what, you know, getting to a biblical perspective and a biblical worldview as far as what a woman's role should be versus what a man's role should be.
Yeah, Doug, when you bring that in, you change the dimension of the entire conversation. That's just the direction we need to take. From a biblical Christian worldview perspective, how would we make the case for why women in combat, mothers in combat, would be wrong? We'll give attention to that when we come right back. Coast to Coast, this is the Albert Mueller Program. The The topic is Women in Combat. The occasion is leading seaman Faye Turney's release from Iranian captivity and the comments made by the Iranian president about the decadence of the West reflected in the fact that we would send a mother into a combat zone, a mother of a three-year-old little girl, and, of course, that she would willingly go. This is a story reverberating throughout the Muslim world and beyond, and it's led to an interesting conversation right here on the Albert Mueller Program. The phone number, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Norton, Virginia, where Tracy's on the line. Go ahead, Tracy.
Yes, I do believe that women should be able to go to combat and to fight. They have fought for that right, and it is a right, and it is a choice, and it is a privilege to get to go to war for this country. And also the thing that goes along with that is women in today's society have a choice whether they want to have children or not. And women who have children, everybody is different. You cannot categorize every mother together. Some people like staying home, some people like working, and some like being in the military. So it is a woman's right, and it is a choice. And perhaps the Iranians are saying this so that they can take away choices from women that we have fought so hard to get. It is a choice, just like everything else.
Well, Tracy, let me ask you this. Do you think that it's a moral choice for a mother willingly to leave her three-year-old to go to serve in the Navy?
No, I think it's her choice, period. I don't think it's a moral choice as much as, you know, if I get up and I go to work and I'm killed in a car accident. Yes, you're more likely in the wars, and actually you're educated more with the military. They're going to let you know. I know that they try to talk a lot of times if you're married already. You know, listen, this is serious business. You will be away from your family. You know, they don't try to sweet talk you into things. They lay it on the line and they talk to you how it is.
So you would have no trouble if your daughter decided to leave her three-year-old to go serve in the Navy.
I don't know, because I have a six-year-old and a seven-year-old daughter, and I'm not sure how I feel. I'm not in that situation, but I know as a mother, I want to support her fully, and that is a decision that I think, again, even going back to work, you're going to discuss it with the entire family.
Just so I understand, Tracy, you're saying all that really matters is her choice, and once she's made that choice, no one has any right to question it.
Oh, no, I'm not saying that. We can question things in any which way, but you're going back again. We're doing exactly what the Iranians want us to do, and that is taking away rights and decisions that women should be able to make on their own. A man should not tell me when I can have children. A man should not be able to tell me when I can go to work or not go to work. That is not a moral issue. That is a right that we have fought for, just as exactly like we should not be able to tell men when to go to work and when to go to battle.
So there's no moral distinction between men and women. I just want to understand your position. None at all.
I'm not saying that there are moral distinctions between men and women, but
so there are some things that women should not do.
Father going on a mission and a single mother going on a mission.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you called, Tracy. I think most people, I'd be surprised if most people didn't disagree with you. I disagree with you and say there's no difference between a father and a mother. In this context, I do appreciate your call. Let's go to Terrence very quickly in Tampa, Florida. Go ahead, Terrence.
Hi, how you doing? Hey, I just wanted to make a comment about your conversation you're having now about the women in combat. I'm a combat vet myself, and my wife was in the reserves, and I've been to combat. My wife was called up. She went to Iraq. I was a stay-at-home dad with a four-month-old and a four-year-old, and I kind of experienced both sides of the fence, and I'll tell you, I agree. My position is that women should be allowed to serve their country like anyone else. I don't agree that they should be in combat. Some of the things that she's seen over there, she's a medic. She wasn't in the, quote unquote, front lines, but she's seen a lot of stuff that, had she been in a combat job, she would have seen a lot more, and I just don't agree that women should be in combat, but they should be allowed to serve their country. Now, in her case,
right,
she should have never went with a four-month-old, and they figured that out after she'd been gone for 6 months and sent her home. So there's safeguards out there for that. But if women, unlike your caller, Roy, that says that a woman can arbitrarily just say that she's not going to go, is not the case. If you're in the military,
yeah,
and you're a woman and you have kids, you're allowed to be in there, but you have to have a plan in place for what to do with your kids, who's going to keep them while you're going off to combat. You just can't say, I want out now, or I want out because I had a baby, or I want out because I have children.
All right. Okay, Terrence, thanks so much for that call. And, again, I can't speak for the military, but it's fascinating to have these different perspectives presented. But sounds like you know what you're talking about there. Amanda in Louisville, Kentucky is on the line listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Amanda.
Yes, I just wanted to say that I think the root of the issue is women don't understand the privilege that God has in a biblical sense of what it means to be a woman. And if the women could just really grasp, I mean, they cry, but if they could just grasp what it means to really nurture and love and raise your children, then they wouldn't want to go out and do these things. And that would, you know, not only solve the military thing, but, you know, men don't say that you yeah. can't do it. They want us, a God, to understand what the privilege is.
Amanda, thanks so much for that call. Folks, just in these closing minutes, I want to try to build the case for why I believe it's morally, theologically, biblically wrong for women in this kind of situation, mothers in particular, to serve in combat. There can be extenuating circumstances in virtually any dimension of life. I fully expect that most mothers I know would take up arms and do anything they had to do to protect their children. I have no question about the endurance of women in terms of their tenacity in protecting their own babies. I also think that I hold an exalted position of women as made in the image of God, but also the scripture tells us that men and women are different. There are different assigned roles, and it's not by accident that men serve as the protector and the provider. And I believe that the biblical worldview clearly holds that to be a male responsibility. I think when we buy into this ideal of egalitarianism, and as I said in my article published at albertmuller.com this morning, when we defy nature and say there is no difference, we lie to ourselves. I think we all know that that three-year-old little girl needs her mom. And I think we know also that that mom needs the experience of being mom to that three-year-old little girl. We bought into the idea that equal status has to mean equal opportunity and equal employment. That just doesn't make any sense. Just ask the armed services trying to figure out what to do with the fact that, well, for instance, women want to serve on nuclear submarines. The Navy says no, but for how long? Folks, civilization depends upon certain distinctions, and civilization requires men to do what men are called to do and honor women, especially in this role as mothers. Where that is lacking, civilization itself is endangered. I think the whole world knows that as they're watching us and see what we're missing. I'll be right back. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. You know, there is a lot of discussion out there in the media about Don Imus, the radio personality, who made some just outrageous and immoral comments about the Rutgers University women's basketball team. They were racist. They were inflammatory. I guess they were intended to be humorous. But now CBS Radio and MSNBC have given Mr. Imus a two-week suspension. And there's open debate about whether he should be fired from his position and all the rest. Now, I'll tell you, I'm a bit perplexed by the whole controversy, not because I'm shocked that Dan Imus said something that is inflammatory, but I'm shocked that all of a sudden this has become a matter of shock. After all, Mr. Imus's program is one known for inflammatory comments, and not only that, when you deal with Don Imus as an individual, you're dealing with someone who's always lived on the edge of this kind of issue. What he said was reprehensible, but the reality is there are an awful lot of people who evidently are looking for reprehensible radio. And I find it somewhat hypocritical that now there are people saying, look, here's someone who is known for being risque and rude who is caught being risque and rude. The bottom line is that as a culture, we always reap what we sow. And in terms of his employment, that's something that CBS Radio and MSNBC are going to have to decide. But in terms of the culture, the big question is, why is anyone listening? You know, why is there an audience for this? It is an indictment of the culture as much as an indictment of the individual. Was Don Imus wrong to make these remarks? Of course he was. Should he be censured in public for making them? Of course he should. Beyond that, there is the much larger issue of the coarsening of this culture to the extent that we consider this kind of talk, whether it be race baiting or anything else, as a form of entertainment. We are known by our speech. That's hard enough for all of us. We're known by what we consider humorous. That's a challenge as we do a little moral search in the mirror. We're also known by the entertainment and information choices we make. You know, people that watch the cable movie networks and complain about seeing pornography are, after all, paying for the service about which they complain. I'm not saying that justifies it in any way. Of course, it does not. But the point is, we have created in this culture a market for the basest, lowest, most racist, most outrageous, sexist, and pornographic aspects of the culture. And then I think we often try to make ourselves feel better as a culture by complaining and acting outraged when something happens that, after all, is what made the personality, the program, or the network famous and consumer interested in the first place. We are what we watch. We are what we read. We are why we laugh. We'll be back tomorrow for Ask Anything Wednesday. We'll talk about what's on your mind on the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmohler.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmohler.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.